This episode of Film Sack is brought to you in part by GoDaddy.com. Use the codes Frog1, Frog2, or Frog3 to save money on domains, renewals, hosting, and much more at GoDaddy.com. Thanks, GoDaddy, for supporting the Frog Pants Studios Network.
Thanking you never entered my mind. You know, you are disturbing my work.
Oh. Well, I'll tell you what, sir. We're very sorry, and this will never happen again.
Never, ever. Never. Never. To be
narrow of mind. That's what you always say.
A widescreen just makes a bad film twice as bad. This is a film massacre. Oh, sure.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, where we take movies of some varying reputation, we watch them and we share with you what we think of them. But welcome everybody, it's great to have you here. This is episode 20, that is something of a milestone. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Randy Jordan.
Hey Scott, I'm in a gym where the girls are constantly wearing nothing but spandex and gyrating around, and I would never leave this place.
Ever. I wouldn't Ever. Either, dudes. What are those called? They're not spandex. They're called leotards.
Leotards.
They put the tard and leotard in this movie.
Oh, I knew that was coming.
I'm telling you, if this gymnasium existed in my life, I would you couldn't get me out of there.
You'd still be there.
Bring me food and drink.
Yeah, you'd still be there. It'd be high school. Yeah. Randy, you'd still be sitting in the corner. Who is that guy in the long beard? I don't know. Keep dancing.
It's class of '93.
Also joining us, of course, is Mr. Brian Ibbett.
I loved this movie. You know, I 18 again. Oh no, I'm sorry. We watched what was it, like Father Like Son? No, what was it? Vice Versa? What we no?
Oh wait, oh, Freaky hey, Friday.
Trading Places.
No, Freaky Friday. That was it.
Freaky Friday. All right.
Trading Places is a nice comparison. I like that one. Yeah, that's not bad. Also, ringing up the rear, as he often is known for doing, Mr. Brian Dunaway. Hello, Brian.
Hi. Me and Michael Jackson used to hang out during the '80s. You know. I may have stolen a few moves, like this one, yeah, and this one, yeah, come on.
And Brian, you look, whenever you're dressed in your Michael Jackson outfit, you have all these badges and little pieces of metal. You look like you fell down the stairs with a tackle box.
Yeah, seriously. What's up with that?
Actually, I got ran over by some kind of semi-truck because he was wearing reflectors, if you noticed.
Reflectors on his shoulders, yes.
I kept trying to figure out what those were. What are those on his jacket? Oh, it's road reflectors.
Oh,
you know,
Corey
the fact
Feldman.
Is, the farther we get away from the 80s, the more we're going to refuse to accept that we actually dressed anything like that. We're gonna convince ourselves I was the complete exception. I never once wore anything like that.
Yeah, but dude, reflectors, a shirt that looks like it's six shirts sewn together, I don't think so. That wasn't me, for sure. I know that for sure. But there were a few things, a little peg pants action, red socks.
Actually a scene in this movie where they show you how you make that those clothes so ripped up, and you literally just rip them up. Apparently.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, apparently that is
what
happens.
Movie are we talking about anyway? Because I am totally lost.
Scott Fletcher knows. Should we ask him?
Dream a little dream. The elderly Coleman, played by Jason Robards, and the young and brash Bobby, played by Corey Feldman, learn what life is like from each other's point of view when their bodies are unwittingly switched by way of transcendental meditation. But they're not alone on their strange journey. Coleman's wife, Gina, played by Piper Laurie, is renewed in the body of Lainey, played by Meredith Salinger, the girlfriend of Bobby's best friend, played by Corey Haim. The question is, can they switch back?
Okay, I got a question about this.
That's wrong.
Yeah, in his introduction, it makes it sound like the women switch too, and that didn't happen.
Yeah, the women actually do switch too, but Corey Haim is not his girlfriend.
Yeah, but how do the women switch?
They don't. I disagree.
It's like an essence kind of thing.
They do. She is trapped inside her will is not strong enough. Okay. She is trapped inside. So, the strongest will is on the outside.
Right, let's just agree that the sci-fi element is not the strongest part of this film.
No, you think? Holy crap. It's terrible. It's the worst part of it, if you ask me. It's the part that completely falls down and makes everything else seem stupid. I want to say up front, though, I'm a little nervous about this because all of us have a good friend on the internet named Kat Hunter who says this is one of her favorite movies of all time, that it meant more to her teenage years than anything she'd ever seen.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm going to have to owe her an apology in advance because this
movie
kind of sucks.
I'm on her side.
Oh, yeah, really?
I'm on her side, too. And I'm happy to defend this film against the evil Scott Johnson.
I love Kat Hunter.
And probably Brian Ibbett
You're going to have to defend it for me, too, because.
All right, dude.
Has she watched it recently?
No, of course not. Why would anybody watch this recently? Oh, wait.
Corey Haim just passed away.
You know what we're going to do? We are going he and I are going to be Team Gibbet. And you guys are going to be Team Deluxe Dunaway or something.
There you go.
And
Deluxe Away.
Very nice.
One of my favorite bands from the 90s.
Did you know that I tried out for Deluxe Away?
Did you?
There's no such thing, is there?
That was my wrestling name in high school.
Okay, now I know you're not serious. Whenever we pull out that wrestling name thing.
Team Giblet has the easier job here.
Giblet?
because all you got to do is tear down a movie that just has 1,000 plot holes and not the strongest acting. You know, like the best actor in the film is in the body of Corey Feldman.
Yeah.
It's just sad, you know?
I actually have some interesting thoughts about who I thought performed the best in this movie, but we'll get to that in a minute. So let's break down the stupid plot of the movie, Dream a Little Dream. It basically works like this. Take your Freaky Friday, take your, what was the other one, Ibbett? You had a couple there.
18 again with George Burns, Like Father, Like Son. I can't remember. I was trying to remember with Tina. Who the actor pairs were in Vice Versa and Like Father, Like Son. Because I know collectively. Well, I remember it was Dudley Moore, Kirk Cameron, John Savage, and who's the other? Judge Reinhold. But I couldn't tell you which pair went together.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's parents and kids. That happens all the time, dude. This is like two different age groups just merging together.
You're saying it's totally different than 13 going on 30?
Because that's the same person.
Big's
the same person.
Exactly.
This is nothing like those movies, man. Get those out of your head.
All right. Well, look, this movie was released right around the time of Father Like Son, 18 again, Big. These were all in 88, 87 and 88. Yeah. Vice Versa. I don't remember that at all.
That's what I'm saying. One of them had Dudley Moore, Kirk Cameron, or John Savage, or Judge Reinhold.
That was Father Like Son was
Dudley Moore in.
The Kirk Cameron was the Father Like Son for sure.
Okay.
And it had Dudley Moore in it.
For sure. Oh. And you say you're not an 80s child.
And that was before Kirk Cameron went crazy.
Yes.
That was right before that.
Yeah. Before he found the Lord, I think we should correct that.
Now, but see, all of those guys, all of those shows, movies had kind of a cool hook into how everybody switches places.
What, you don't think running into somebody on your bicycle is a good hook?
Well, it's not even that. It's more complicated. So you got old man, what's his name?
Rhubarb.
Old man McGillicuddy out there.
I always call him Rhubarb. I always want to call him Jason Rhubarb. I just can't help it.
Dude, what the crap?
That's okay.
He is a fine actor, one of the great actors of his generation, I would say, in film and stage and everything else. Yeah. And I loved him in Parenthood, by the way. Great movie if you ever want to see a funny movie.
Yes.
So Jason Robards doing his thing, and he's out there doing transcendental whatever meditation. Is that right? Transcendental.
Sure, why not? He's trying to he's trying.
It's kind of like Tai Chi or whatever. So he's out there doing his little flow thing with his hands with his wife. And there's much more to the plot in terms of meeting everybody early on. But we'll get to that when we get to clips. But he's out there doing this with his wife. He's finally convinced her to do it with him. And
doing it with his wife.
She thinks it's a little goofy, but they're doing it together. And then at the same time, the hot girl in the show, who is way hot, I'll admit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
She's a beautiful girl.
She's
beautiful
way good looking. She has a funny upper lip. But anyway, she's riding her bike. And Corey Feldman is running full blast in his stupid 80s clothes and his dumb hair, looking like a weird, psychotic clone of Patrick Swayze, by the way, in this whole movie to me. He looks like Patrick Swayze.
Michael Jackson.
Yeah, it's weird. he's running full stop down the street. That doesn't make sense, running full stop. And and he runs into her on the bike pretty hard, and they kind of fall apart. And at the same time, the other dude's meditating, and somehow him running into her on a bike and him over there doing the meditation and the fact that they both exist on Earth at the same time.
Yeah.
Suddenly they switch. Well, they don't even switch places. The consciousness of old man McGillicuddy gets injected into Corey Feldman's body.
Yeah.
And we are led to believe.
And his body disappears.
Yeah.
As well as the,
Now, most of these other movies, they rely on things like, I made a wish last night, and the wish was I could grow up, so the next day I'm Tom Hanks. I mean, those, they kind of make a little bit of sense. You can get past those weird premises.
This one of them had a crystal skull, too. I'm trying to remember which pair it was, but they both touched a crystal skull. And
that was the father one, I think. The
was it?
Father-like
like
son.
Like father-like son. Oh. Like father-like Indiana Jones.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so fair enough. If we accept that, then you have the rest of the movie, which is basically him and this kid's body trying to kind of adjust, and then there's a kind of a subplot with a friend of his who wants to shoot the stoner kid, and it gets really convoluted. and the stoner kid's name, by the way, is Dumas. Hello.
Dumas.
We get the joke.
Come on, Dumas, who was actually Corey Feldman, or in this case, Bobby Keller's best friend, as well as Dinger. No one said his name yet. Dinger,
yeah.
Corey Haim, Dinger.
We should also clear the table and say that we did not plan on doing a Corey Haim movie because of Corey Haim's death. We had this planned months ago on our list of movies to see. So it wasn't our intention to do this, although I have a clip later that is weird and I had to do it and I feel bad almost, but not really. But anyway, I think, I'm going to say it right up front, best performance in the movie was Corey Haim. He cracked me up. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I liked him. I like Dinger.
I can't go with you there.
Okay, so who are you going to give it to?
And I'm supposed to be defending the film.
Who are you going to give the Oscar to? We should have like mini Oscars.
Yeah, we should. If the Oscar was going to give him for a performance in a male lead role or a supporting role, who would you give it to? Not Feldman.
No, definitely not Corey Feldman, although I will say I think he's a better actor than Corey Haim was.
Oh, really? Wow.
Which, that's not much of a stretch.
Wow. Yeah.
I thought Jason Robards was fantastic. He had a crap role to play, and he actually made it okay. Yeah. Believe it or not, I was always entertained by how well Victoria Jackson fit her character.
I love her character.
Yeah. Now,
if those don't know, SNL, look her up, Victoria Jackson.
She was
school.
The blonde in the 80s along with Dana, in the same group as Dana Carvey and Chris Rock. And
Nora Dunn and Phil Hartman.
Yeah.
If I could come back, though, I gotta start with, this film starts with something that I thought would have predated by a whole decade, and that is a joke montage at the top of the film where it was very reminiscent, or in a reverse way, of the 40-year-old virgin sequence where they sit on the couch next to one another and say, you know how I know you're gay? They cut jokes back and forth and back and forth. And the film, I thought, I couldn't remember it very well from seeing it as a teenager. And so I thought, oh, yeah, this is a comedy. This is like a really funny movie. And then, of course, it's not a really funny movie. It's actually a very whimsical movie. But the beginning, it totally betrays everything about the rest of the film. It is a joke telling montage where you almost wonder if they let the two actors, the two Coreys, just ad lib,
just screw around. Yeah.
Yes.
And then picked out the stuff that they wanted for their credits.
Well, you know, those guys are high as a kite the whole time they're doing it. Just saying.
Totally. And they interspersed all that joke stuff with Velvet Frog singing. And something that just screams 80s is fuchsia and teal title text.
Right. Yes. Oh, yeah, dude.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Mel Torme screams like 60s. So they were really dating the film strangely, if you think about it.
Yeah, it was a weird mix of those things. It almost looked like there was some neon in there, but then there was kind of this old school look to things. It was
exactly.
Weird.
And
weird,
that's one of the things I liked about the movie, and one of the things I always liked about the movie back then, it was basically them trying to bring class to the 80s. I mean, it was like reaching back through the time. I know it looks silly now.
Keep going.
But I really felt like they were trying to bring a sense of, you know, old school kind of class to this movie.
They were bridging the generations, Brian.
They were bridging the generations.
I could totally see that. Like making a movie that says, okay, we're going to put some of the young appealing, you know, the people who are current hot performers right now into a movie, introduce some of those young audiences to Jason Robards and Piper Laurie and my favorite person in the movie, Harry Dean Stanton.
Oh, I forgot about him.
And bridge it with some freaking Van Morrison music. And
absolutely.
You know,
it was a beautiful mix, if you ask me. But I'm a defender. I'm on team.
Right. Team
Deluxe Away.
Yeah.
Look, here's the thing about this movie. Well, let me give you some background. Director Mark Rocco directed the film. He died at a kind of young age. Died of suddenly of weird, no reason, at like 45, not many years
after. He was meditating.
Yeah, it was just that. He was strange. Currently he's in some dreamscape full of toilet paper flowing everywhere.
You got to admit, though, that every time they went into the dream sequences, I thought it was very effective.
It was okay. The toilet paper was distracting.
Yes, the toilet paper was unnecessary.
The toilet paper was distracting.
If you look at it as like, I don't know, you know, it kind of reminded me of with the whole kind of the faded, the muted colors and the whole, you know,
reverse.
The wind whispering and the reverse kind of stuff. Kind of reminded me a little bit about being dead in World of Warcraft.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's true. Just go over the spirit healer and you can get right back in your body there.
That's awesome. That is so funny because there was something I couldn't put my finger on. That was probably it.
Because I didn't think about that either, but that's very true.
Wow, that's a great pick there. So
if they would just put some toilet paper in World of Warcraft, we'd be ready.
We'd be set, yeah. So Mark Rocco is the director. It turns out he is the brother of character actor Alex Rocco, which many of you may know from many gangster movies, including the original Godfather films, or the first one anyway. And he was the wife to Victoria Principal's character. Victoria Principal, who the hell am I talking about? Victoria Jackson. Wow.
And he would have been the husband, by the way, but go ahead.
What'd I say? The wife of? Yes. Holy smack. I can't talk about
it. He was the stepson of Alex Rocco.
Oh, I thought he was brother. No, he has to be.
Whatever. Who needs facts?
He's older than him. How could he be a stepson?
Whole movie's kind of surreal.
Wait, the guy that played Gus Keller, Alex Rocco, is older than the director Mark Rocco, or would have been.
By a lot, yeah.
Yeah, so, oh, he's his stepson.
Yes.
Okay. Erase all that. Alex Rocco, I just wanted to make the point that he plays a regular character on The Simpsons. He's that guy that's always sort of running a business or running a TV station.
Yeah.
So if his voice seemed familiar, it's because he's that guy, which I just thought was interesting. He's also accused of killing somebody in Miami when he was younger. Little
trivia.
Yeah.
I did read about that.
Yeah. What the hell was that sound?
as well am I.
Somebody's farting on their microphone. All right. Moving on. I got some trivia. On the wall in Bobby's room during that opening sequence Randy referred to, the movie The Lost Boys from 1987 can be seen on the wall.
Yes.
So stupid little thing there. One of the five body swap movies all released around that time I mentioned. Original working title was Long Before Tomorrow, which is
I am so glad they changed it.
That's a obnoxious name. Seems boring and lame. Yeah. 4 days before filming, Corey Haim, the late Corey Haim, broke his leg, and Dinger's character had to be rewritten to include the injury.
Boy, that's when you know you have a solid script, when you can just completely rewrite it a few days before filming.
Yeah, oh, you broke your leg? Come here, bring a pen.
I actually couldn't find any trivia on that. It's funny that you found that, because I kept wondering, I'm like, what the heck does it have to do with his leg like that? Why did they write that into the story? Because I was convinced he had to have really broken his leg, and I couldn't find anywhere on the internet. Your internet skills are superior to mine.
The most frightening statistic or piece of trivia about this movie for me by far is that Corey Haim actually auditioned for the role of Dick Grayson / Robin in Batman Forever in 1995.
Wow. I would have went to see that.
Oh my gosh. Who ended up getting that? The dude from Smells Like a Woman or whatever?
Yes, and Chris.
Smells Like a Woman.
Smells Like a Woman.
Chris O'Donnell?
Oh, Chris O'Donnell, thank you.
That's it.
That's like some kind of weird phonetic way you remember names. Chris O'Donnell. Anyway.
He's a real hit at family reunions.
He surely is.
Oh, man.
Oh, I know you. Okay, give me
bum
a second.
Bob Ford. Hi. Yes, of course I remember you.
Very uncomfortable times at the Home Depot.
Oh, see how good the movie is? It makes everybody happy.
That's brilliant. All right, I'm going to jump right in with an early clip. Again, the scene Randy referred to during the opening credits, which I kind of thought was clever and all right. Mm-hmm. You know, it was okay. It's actually where I started to like Dinger. I liked Dinger. We'll get more into that in a minute. I'm going to defend Dinger. I think he was.
You would.
I like dumb, stupid guy friends. Listen, I'm
Dinger
a Paul,
lover.
I like Pauly Shore movies still.
My gosh.
Okay, and he's that guy, right? So yeah. I have a thing for that guy, for that kind of secondary stupid guy character that's always in these movies and plays, you know, something to the straight man. Those guys crack me up, and I'm happy to watch Encino Man anytime you give me the disc. Love it.
So, like, hey, Scott, it's 5 a.m. Wake up. We're going to watch Encino Man. Anytime. He said anytime.
Seriously. I wouldn't even I can't even watch that one in good faith on this show because I feel like it's better than Film Sack deserves. I like that movie.
Oh, then we're totally doing it.
All right, we'll do it.
Got to.
Good faith.
Here is here is him talking about how he's in love and some of the sort of weird back and forth between the two Coreys.
I'm in love. That could be a problem. I don't think you understand. No, no, I do understand. I really do. Which hand is it this week, pal?
Masturbation joke. We get it.
Hey, dude, that was cutting edge in the 80s. No one even admitted they used to do that word you said until, until
the late 80s. Brian can barely speak it now, apparently.
Right, the love that dare not speak it.
Now there are entire movies dedicated to it.
Indeed.
Yeah, there are.
Main Street movies, I bet.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
His love, the interest that he had before he switched bodies was still for the brunette chick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yes.
Right. Just making sure I got that right in the beginning.
I was a little uncomfortable when he just started saying that and didn't specify that he was in love with a girl. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. Also, Corey Haim seems to have, through the movie, the voice of a 11-year-old going on 12 who's getting...
He always had that, though. He had that in Lucas. He had that in Lost Boys.
Corey Feldman throughout the movie has the voice of Christian Slater after an entire bong full of weed.
That is exactly right. Look at what we've created here. A bong full of weed, Christian Slater's voice looks like a mini Patrick Swayze dressed up like Michael Jackson. That's insane. Yes. That's insane that he existed.
And he's the one who has survived.
Yeah, he's doing all right. Got a hot wife. Not that that's the ultimate goal in life. I'm just saying.
It don't hurt.
Yeah, he got over his drug stuff, I think.
The four of us all have hot wives, and I'm here to tell you, it's a good thing.
If he should
aspire to this.
If he doesn't get over his hot stuff, if he doesn't get over his drug use or his drug stuff now, I don't know when he will, because that had to be pretty rough.
Feldman's had a weird year, if you kind of think about it, because two of the people he really, you know, was really connected to a lot have passed away this past year, Michael Jackson and Corey Haim. And so, you know, he's got to be going through some weird stuff now.
That's true. I forgot about his literal connection to Michael Jackson. They really did hang out. Yeah.
Yeah, they really did.
I wonder if he ever drank the Jesus juice.
I don't.
Whoa.
I can't even say the M word. You're over here.
No. That was the wine that Michael Jackson reportedly gave.
Yeah,
the young...
he called it Jesus juice.
Yeah, gave it to Feldman.
What did you think I was talking about, Brian?
I have no idea.
He said, yeah, I'll have some Jesus juice in that voice. Come here, mini freaking what's his name? And even he died last year. Man, there's a lot of death around this.
Ibbot had told me something the other day, not to steer away from what we're talking about. I love talking about death. But Ibbot had related something to me that I had never thought about before. And that's that whenever Haim is in a movie, it seems like his mouth is open like 90% of the time. Not talking, just hanging a gap.
Totally.
Yeah,
I've never noticed that until Ibbot mentioned it to me the other day.
That was his thing. I mean, he'd be, you know, mouth agape for the movie. And I think I'm looking it up right now, but I think the Lost Boys page even says something about...
And that's a typical symptom of Quaalude use right there. Just makes your mouth hang open all the time.
That may be possible. He claims in the trivia that I read that he's been taking... that he was smoking pot as early as his Lucas filming. Did cocaine during Lost Boys... and moved to downers like Valium and other sort of prescription-style stuff right about after this movie because he was going kind of crazy and needed to get down from that. And I think that's ultimately what caused his death, not to get morbid about Corey Haim. But I watched this clip of him in an interview on E! Entertainment in 2001 where he was asked a question and all he could do was mumble stuff. I mean, he had it in a bad way. So I think this is one of those just like tragic dudes who, you know... no one's to blame for taking drugs but him.
Yeah.
But he's one of these guys that once you start, he cannot quit. You know,
yeah.
he just can't stop.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's not like Feldman. Feldman has got enough self-control that he could do something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
You know, what's weird about these two actors is they so depended on one another for any kind of reputation. Like, if you pick any role that either of them played in any film they were together, you could say, oh, well, you know, you could replace him with, pick somebody, Rob Lowe.
Sure. Yeah.
And you'd be fine. But you can't replace them both.
Right.
Like, you know, you can switch out Corey Haim in this film with pretty much anybody about that age. The same thing with Corey Feldman. But if you replace them both, there's something totally missing from the film that they managed to bring as a team. And I that will always fascinate me. I always wonder how in the world the sum could be so much greater than its parts.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. It's weird. It's one of those things that is tragic because somebody had to die, but in a way kind of cool because these guys, you know, were sort of there for each other through their whole careers, really.
Oh, yeah.
And now, you know, nobody's hiring anybody to do anything, although I guess Corey Haim had a couple of projects going when he died, but they're probably direct to DVD stuff or whatever. So, you know, these are the atypical end up on weird reality show child actor endings in a way.
By the way, the answer to the question that so many girls asked one another in the 80s, which of the Coreys do you find sexier? The answer is Rob Lowe.
Oh, that's always the answer. I agree with that. So we got a vision here of how Robards is the angry old man telling everyone to get off his lawn. I like this scene a lot.
I love it.
How many times have I told you this is private property?
Every day, sir.
Well, then why don't you go another way? Foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. Emerson, 1841.
Yeah, like Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. I've heard of them.
Stay off the grass. Look what you're doing to my lawn.
Oh, you don't have to thank us, sir. It was our pleasure.
Oh, good stuff, dude. Yelling at kids in your lawn, walking through your flowers in your garden. That kid with the Emerson, Lake, and Powell thing. Okay, first of all, I was in high school right around when this was made. Mm-hmm. And if anyone would have said that around me, we would have kicked that kid's butt.
Punched him. Absolutely. Yeah.
You guys weren't all into the whole prog rock thing, huh?
That's the thing. It's like now, if you hear it now, you just go, who's that? Who's Emerson, Lake, and Powell anyway?
Palmer, by the way.
That didn't work. Or what I say? Powell.
Powell.
Exactly. See, my Lake point Powell. Exactly. So, I mean, my point is that it didn't work then, and it doesn't work now.
Yeah.
Gosh.
They did a fine job though of picking music that was appropriate for the time.
Oh, yeah.
At certain parts of the film, like I remember really really fondly how this film and then its use in a television show caused that Timbuktu 3 song "Future So Bright I Gotta Wear Shades" to become a hit from nowhere. Yeah. And I mean, like I was just waiting for them to mess up and throw in, you know, Electric Light Orchestra or something into this movie where it didn't belong. But no, it was a mix of crooners and, you know, like pop REM.
Yeah, yeah, very, totally. Very and nice. I think if you actually, I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm glad Ibbitt's here too to comment on this because of his, you know, musical addictions. I'm going to say this about this movie: my favorite thing about the entire movie, if I had to pick one thing, was this incredibly extensive and varied soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And they did that thing where I felt like I was getting led around a little bit because you'd see this stuff happen in like Breakfast Club, and it's so well integrated into the overall experience of that movie and the John Hughes experience that I don't separate the two. But this movie was like, this soundtrack is awesome, but that last edit was donkey turd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like it was just it was really bad. But the music was like, oh, here's a montage where they're riding around on a horse-drawn carriage, and I, you know, all I need is I just need B.A. Baracus to build something out of a barrel.
No, it's true. I mean, they had Michael Damian,
yep.
David Essex, right. Rocked On. Was it?
No, well,
it's a Michael Damian song. It's Michael Damian, but he covered it. I think
song just is married to this. To this movie, to me,
yeah. I mean, well, because they drop little bits of that in as segues between certain scenes. So they drop that in the Van Morrison, which I mentioned earlier.
Yep.
Fee Waybill from the Tubes has a song in here.
Uh-huh.
Was the guy from Loverboy? I think Reno, Mike Reno.
Yeah,
he's got a song in here. So yeah, it's a good soundtrack, and then you couple it with the the crooner stuff, the Velvet Frog and all that.
And when they when they walk into a dance and I hear like you can give me any kind of movie you want, but the minute somebody walks into a room with a bunch of lights and streamers and balloons and I suddenly hear Forever Young going, I'm 16 again.
Yeah.
And this movie had moments where I was 16 again.
Yeah, this movie it kind of went over the top with the 80s stuff. I mean, I don't think I was ever this 80s.
I told you. The older we get, the more we're going to deny it.
But no, I never was this 80s. I remember back then. I did a lot of this stuff, but you know, I never made my own jackets with reflectors and stuff on it. I mean, I never seen anybody at my school do that. Now, I'm not saying that didn't happen at some schools, but I don't remember doing any of that kind of thing.
You say you never rolled up your jeans. I'm going to
No. Actually, it's funny you mentioned that because just yesterday I showed my son how to tight roll or peg his pants.
Yep.
And that was a lot of fun. And my wife was very mad at me and told me not to do that kind of stuff again.
Oh, make our children look stupid.
Yeah. I love that stuff, too.
Trying to bring it back.
We have an artist ready for that very reason.
Am I the high top person? Go ahead. Am I the only person
in this group with who never saw this movie until just now? This was my first viewing of this movie.
You guys are all talking about it.
Me
and you both. This is me.
This is probably my third or fourth viewing. It's got to be up there. I've watched this movie many times.
No, me and Ibbet, and maybe that's why Ibbet and I are on the side of this is not as good as people think it is, because this is our first viewing. I remember seeing chunks and pieces and stuff, but I don't remember seeing the movie as a whole. And I actually thought Corey Haim was the star. I didn't realize Feldman was taking the hot seat this time.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things like that at play. But you know, right now I sound like I'm kind of complimenting a few things. I just think that let me play this clip for you. This one rang really true to me because we had a really distinct group of stoner kids in our school. And by the way, everybody damn smokes in this movie. This is one of those things, Randy, you always talk about how this stuff is just gone now.
Before Joe Esterhaus went public in the late 90s, there was so much smoking. It's just shocking.
And it's shocking to see it, even though I don't care. Like, I don't care if you smoke, but it's so shocking in a movie about teenagers anymore. Yeah. That it's just like nobody does this in like
no one.
What's his name's Infinite Playlist? Zach and Cody or
Zach and Miri make an Infinite Playlist.
I always get these two confused. They came out too close together.
And Nora.
Nick and Nora. Thank you. Nora. Gosh dang it. I always get that.
Not a bad movie. All right.
So let's listen to these stoner actors. I think they're terrible actors, and there's a little language here, but it's too funny to pass up. And kind of sums up a very distinct sensibility about my high school experience. Here it is.
Let's go.
Hey, would you relax? We'll be here, all right? Parental bullshit. Look who it is. Must be band practice, huh?
What's the matter? You boys forget your flutes?
Man, check out the tits on that one.
Hey, that's my girlfriend.
Yeah, I know, Joel. What do you think about that?
Oh, I think you're an asshole, dude.
That's a man.
Hey, chill out, man. Time and place. Not in front of the ladies.
Okay.
Don't forget to write. Okay, Joel? Nice jacket.
All right, nice jacket. But my favorite line in there is, not in front of the ladies.
Have you seen these women? They're half naked.
But I just
There's
remember
the ladies in there.
I remember those guys in high school. They all dressed like Bon Jovi, these stoner kids.
Yeah.
And those guys had that look down, that dumbass kid and the rest of them, or Dumas, whatever.
Dumas.
I love that they had, this was not true in my high school, 4 stoner kids in the group, 1 black guy in the group.
Yeah.
Didn't happen. I'm not saying black guys can't be into getting stoned and listening to heavy metal. I'm not saying that's a problem.
It was such tokenism. Like this guy, I wouldn't be surprised if you looked at the cast sheet and his character name was Token.
Right.
I mean, he was almost as big a token black as the character in Final Fantasy 13.
Or the character Token in South Park.
South Park,
Let's move on to another clip. I got, this one's a little bit morbid, but I got to play it anyway because it's just so ironic. You got to find these in movies and you got to play them. This is a point where the body switch has taken place and Corey Feldman's laying on the floor talking to his parents, Victoria Jackson and the dude from The Simpsons. And also there is Corey Haim trying to help wake him up. Hey, it's us. You know, don't you know who we are? And there's a drug comment that I just couldn't pass up. Here it is.
Hey, Bobby. It's me, Dinger. Don't you know me?
Where's Gina?
Who's Gina? Maybe he has a girlfriend.
No, ma'am, he does have a girlfriend. Her name is Shelley.
He has a girlfriend.
No, he doesn't have any girlfriend. I wouldn't know about it. He's on drugs.
Don't look at me, sir. I'm totally clean.
What?
Oh, ouch. Oh, I'm totally clean. Oh, dinger. Dinger, dinger, dinger. So anyway,
actually, that was Feldman, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, that was Haim. That was Haim saying, don't look at me, I'm clean.
I'm clean. Oh, okay, I thought that was Feldman still talking, okay.
No, Feldman's laying there. You're seeing it from his view. It's got this weird fisheye thing where he's kind of looking up. Yeah, stupid, dumb. Anyway, I had to capture that because, I don't know.
Yeah.
We can't go this whole show without at least acknowledging that Corey Haim, you know, died way too early. He's a year older than me.
Yeah.
And that's too young, dude, to just...
Way too young, yeah.
You know, it could have been Robin, dude. Could have been a contender.
Could have been. Got up to 300 pounds at one point. I did not know that.
Holy crap, really?
Yeah.
Well, I read about how he was having multiple strokes, and it was all drug-induced stuff, but having, like, weird all kinds of... And that was probably during that time. His heart was about to give out, and all kinds of bad stuff. But anyway, we won't dwell on that, of course.
This is a happy show.
That's right. Yes.
People don't die.
They
just elevate their minds to
that's
a higher
right.
thing.
They just switch into younger bodies, live forever.
Okay. One of my favorite parts of the movie, before we get to our last clip, is, and you guys can talk about yours as well. One of the neat parts, I thought anyway, was in the credits where everyone fills the theater while Robards is fake singing in real time. Like he's up there just kind of, it's definitely not his voice. In fact, that was the frog, right?
That was the frog.
the Velvet Frog. He's up there singing, and the camera starts out behind him, and you see the theater totally empty. And then it kind of loops back around at him, and then loops back out at the theater, and now it's full of kids.
Mm.
And I love that because what that meant was, in an age of not fancy special effects, that while the camera was briefly on Robards, people are running in there, and he's still having to act and sing and see them fill in. I think that's great.
Yeah.
Love that kind of stuff. I know it's a small thing and a totally tiny little whatever, but
I love giant group things like that. I mean, the Japanese do it great.
Yeah.
There's always videos, stuff like that.
I agree. Now, Ibbett, you said Henry Dean Stanton, your favorite character in the movie. He's, by the way, my favorite alien. Harry. He's my favorite alien murder of the first alien movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, I think he was the first one to go. Pretty sure.
No, he was one of the last because he went back for the cat. Went back for Jones and
never go back for the cat.
Yeah.
Never go back for the cat. It was he and I can't remember the black actor in that movie has a really memorable name and I can't pull it out. But
not gonna say Token, are you?
Token.
Not gonna say Token.
But what?
You were baiting me.
You mentioned Harry. Did I say Henry? I meant Harry. You mentioned him. What is it about his performance that stuck out to you? Why do you like him in this movie?
Well, I like him in any movie I see him in, but in this one, it was, he always makes whatever character he plays. It just looks like it's him. I mean, it's effortless to him. Acting appears to be completely effortless to him. He can walk into a room, play a character, and you think, oh, that's Harry Dean Stanton.
Only ever cast him as the grimy cook in Down Periscope or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
he doesn't ever have to stretch and play James Bond or something.
This is true, but I mean, you know, you look at the range that he's done, and he played Molly Ringwald's drunk dad in Pretty in Pink, and it was a much different role from this one in the way that, yeah, he's still kind of a scraggly dude, but he's, you know, way off the deep end as far as his life's out of control. And this one, he's at least a supporting person to Robards and Piper Laurie's character. But when Corey Feldman does come to him, it's not that whole slapsticky, well, how do I know that you're really my old friend?
I'm glad they didn't do that. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. It was all right, okay, I guess I do kind of believe you. That's kind of weird, but you've kind of convinced me kind of thing without the whole goofiness that sometimes.
Yeah. All I had to do is say, you remember that movie, like Father Like Son? Yes, just like that.
Yes, exactly.
And don't forget, Randy, before I move to you to talk about some of your favorite stuff, Henry or Harry Dean Stanton, is it Henry? Yeah, Harry, was the last thing he did. I take it back. He wasn't in what I thought he was in. Shoot, never mind. You and I have shared one of our favorite movies he's not in. He's not in, what's that movie? The one we just talked about, the Tim Burton movie, Big Fish.
Big Fish.
He's not in Big Fish.
He's still alive, too. He was just in Big Love.
Big Love is what I'm thinking of, yeah.
Fantastic role for him.
You lived that, right, Scott?
Yeah, he was that guy. Yeah, dude. Some of my neighbors do. But, Roman Grant was the character he played in that, and he was, like, the lead, like, prophet dude or whatever of
so
the
evil.
Little sect, and he was great.
Just love really to was. Hate him.
Yeah,
love to hate him.
About that.
But
that's
still just as scraggly, but, you know, but a whole different role for him.
Yeah, he was in Alice, I guess, that's out now. Plays the caterpillar. I don't think I'm talking about the movie, but something else. Not the old show with Flo in it. Not that. a really strong career. And I saw something in him just on a fluke the other day called Paris, Texas. I don't know if you guys ever saw that, 1984.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he played a really interesting kind of like character that lost his memory. And it's got all kinds of great people in it, like Dean Stockwell's in it. And it's a movie that does not feel like it was 1984. It's a weird kind of strange movie that feels very recent. You could convince me that the Coen brothers made a new movie if I didn't know better.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. Anyway, Randy, what jumps out at you in this movie? Outside of performances and stuff, what is it you're going to defend most about it today?
Oh, okay. I was going to say, let me attack first. The thing that made the least sense to me was the explanation of what needs to be done to get out of the exchange state through these really disjointed and meaningless dreams where I guess the real Bobby is talking to the transported Coleman. I don't know. It's so screwed up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They didn't need that, quite frankly. They could have had Bobby just realize what had happened and state it if you have to.
Yeah.
And then go on. Because ultimately at the end of the film they cast aside that entire mechanic.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well then why'd you make me suffer through it in the first place?
Yeah.
But
right.
But dropping that, I thought the film was really entertaining. It's just entertaining. I was entertained. And I realized I saw this when I was like 16. And so I have the same memories and feelings that Cat Hunter does about a lot of movies. You know, there was a time when people marketed movies like this to teenagers like us specifically. Nowadays, they market movies that aren't like this to teenagers in this real scattershot approach. We're going to make it as funny and as gross and as ridiculous and as outrageous as we possibly can. And then if that doesn't work, we're going to call it unrated and release it again on DVD.
Yeah.
And there's not a target. It's just as far as we can go with whatever. And, you know, I kind of sound like back in my day, but back in my day, movies like this were made for people like me.
Yes.
And I was able to revisit that. Thank you, Brian. I love Brian Dunaway agreeing with me while I'm talking.
It's a recording, actually.
Yeah. It's a soundboard.
I actually went away for about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's set to go off every like 20 seconds. Just got lucky.
That's awesome. That's brilliant timing.
But I was actually impressed with how it held up. I was expecting to watch it and have a Pretty in Pink moment, and I never did. The whole time. You know Pretty in Pink when suddenly Andrew Dice Clay shows up and takes you completely out of the movie?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was expecting that, and that never happened. There was one sequence where they were singing, and I thought, ooh, this is kind of off-kilter, but it didn't totally trash the whole effect for me.
Yeah, and thankfully the real bad singing came in the closing credits, so you're okay there.
Oh, man. My gosh.
Now,
that was atrocious.
That was pretty bad. Now, Dunaway, before we get to you, just another note about Harry Dean Stanton, because I'm suddenly completely like obsessed with this guy. He was born on July 14th, 1926. He is 83 years old now.
Wow.
The interesting bit I found right now is he spent time in the military during World War II. Makes sense for his age. He was in the USS Navy. He was a cook aboard the LST ship during the Battle of Okinawa.
Yeah, I actually have reversed his real life with the movie Down Periscope. And Down Periscope, he plays the driver. He plays the mechanic guy, not a cook. In real life, he was actually a cook.
That's right. He totally is. Anyway,
maybe it was just for research.
He looks like a withered old thing now, man. I feel bad because he's probably not got much left in him. But hats
don't
off
feel,
to Harry
don't feel
Dean Stanton.
Bad. Feel good for how he's worked so long into his career.
Well, you know
exactly. I mean. And again, you know the role he played in Big Love just a year ago, just stellar. And easily as good as anything he did prior.
It took some energy too, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
didn't look hard. He has done 168 movies. Rock on, Harry.
Man. Wow.
Okay, Dunaway, tell us your favorite thing. What'd you like? What'd you hate?
Favorite thing. You know, the thing that I did not think that was even part of the movie was Corey Haim's gimp leg. I thought that was one of my favorite parts because it was just, I think it brought Haim down enough that he wasn't just silly. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? Because if he hadn't had that hurt leg, I think he would have been a little too over the top. But the fact that he had the hurt leg, it kind of slowed him down a little bit and made him seem a little more real.
Yeah.
The fact that it happened, I thought it was a stroke of brilliance that they put that in there. Now that I know that it just happened because they had to do it, it's not as exciting. But I really thought it was one of my favorite parts. And I'm going to agree with Randy on the least favorite parts too, because I really felt like the whole payoff when Feldman finally reveals he was just messing with the old guy and he could have pretty much, you know, just ended it whenever.
Yeah.
I feel a little ripped off there.
All right. Well, you know that we can't have a show without an angry acting moment. I have a clip here that is awesome. And I have one extra bonus clip that will explain why I think Feldman's the worst thing in the movie. But the first one is an angry acting moment where the word poon is used.
Oh my gosh.
Nice.
Oh no.
Poon. Let me repeat the word poon. All right. So I'm going to play that now.
It's used as a verb. That's the thing that bugs me.
So yeah. So use this for what you will. Here's the poon moment.
Why don't you just leave her alone? I mean, why can't you just poon another girl? I mean, you don't care for her and you don't understand her.
Hey, what's gotten into you, Keller, huh? I mean, if we weren't friends for so long, I'd knock you out. You understand that?
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that.
So I just hurt. Dude.
All right, I take it back. The worst thing in the movie is William McNamara, who played that character, what was his name? Joel.
He was
terrible. Everything he said was bad. And he's been in some decent stuff since then. He was great in, it was an episode, I think, of NYPD Blue, maybe?
Yeah.
I saw him in. Great stuff. He was in Iron Man.
But the thing I like about him in this movie is he really does seem disturbed. Like you're just waiting. He's going to fly off the handle any second. Even though it did seem like silly acting, it just kind of worked for me.
I don't know. I thought he was terrible. That guy drove me nuts.
Poon.
Yeah, please go poon another girl. I don't even know what that means.
I thought he was going to yell at him about the poon. Poon comment.
Yeah, but he didn't seem to bother him.
Didn't bother him a bit. Didn't faze him.
Ah, poon. Poon. Just throwing that word around. Okay,
and Randy's just now discovering that Piper Laurie was hot in her day.
Oh, she was totally good looking. Yeah.
She was, yeah. And boy, you remember from Twin Peaks, which I think was about 3 or 4 years before this, she was.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was after this. This was late 80s. That
was the early 91. 90s. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what Ibbett's saying is he likes women as they get older. Hubba hubba.
I guess so. Yes. Or grilf or whatever.
Okay. This is the worst scene in the movie, in my opinion. This is Corey Feldman freaking out while his friend Joel the idiot is holding a gun on Dumbass.
This is the worst scene in the film to you?
Yes, by far. By far.
Oh, this is where he finally starts channeling.
Oh,
this
no.
Is this is where he finally starts channeling Jason Robards. They let Jason Robards deliver the whole scene, and then Feldman goes back and impersonates that delivery.
Yeah,
like, I was actually impressed with this.
Not me at all. I think Feldman's terrible in this moment. I think that it could have been better. I think it could have better reflected the channeling of Jason Robards, which I try to do every Saturday night at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So here it is, Feldman freaking out.
Come on, why don't we all just make this real bad? Come on, let's see how far we can take it. Why don't we do that right now? Why don't you shoot Dumas in the eye? Or better yet, maybe this will make him feel good. Why don't y'all beat the shit out of me? Come on. That'll make you feel good.
Yes, it would. It'd make me feel great. If you want an answer to that question, yes, that would make me feel good.
Can we get a show of hands?
No, I don't. I get where you're coming from, and I get that the attempt was probably better than it seems now at the time, but I just think he sucks. I think Feldman is a bad actor.
You didn't play the part of that bit where he actually, there's a moment where he gets Robards' voice. Like it's I realize that whole scene is ridiculous. Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely just the stupidest damn thing.
Right.
If Jason Robards at that point in his life was actually in that kid's body, he would have just effed that other kid up. I mean, he would have just gone to town in his face with my fists.
Yep.
All this talking.
I agree.
He knew all those martial art moves. I mean, obviously.
Yeah. Did he, though? Oh, you mean, yeah, he knew Tai Chi. That's a real good fighting stance. Come over here and fight me super slow. Anyway, I just think that seems terrible. I had to play that. That is the only way that we roll. Now, let's move on to our list that we do every week. The Film Sack Checklist. Did somebody barf? No.
No.
They talked about it, but no one did. Booby.
But they talked about.
Yeah.
I can't say it. That's what? How bad I am. I can't even say the T word.
Really?
Wow. Your girlfriend's teat.
Teat. Yeah, teat works.
Teat, I can say.
Teat isn't offensive at all. But comparing it to a cow's freaking udder, that's not a problem.
Yeah.
Stereotypes. I had down parents and old people are dumb and drink all day.
Was there not a stereotype in this movie? Well, I mean, everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, was there? Wow. Exactly. Like the stoners, everybody.
The old man, everybody. Yeah. Yeah.
The one that always bugs me is that parents are stupid in these teenage movies from the 80s. Parents are dumb and completely out of touch, and the kids are the smart ones and have everything going on. I get the appeal because I liked that when I was a kid. It made you feel like, my parents are stupid too. But it doesn't really work that way. So as a parent of a 15-year-old, that kind of stuff just kind of rubs me wrong now because I think it's kind of backwards.
And as much as I love John Hughes, that was a staple in his early films.
Oh, for sure. Dude, Ferris Bueller's parents were retards.
Yeah.
I say that word in the most politically correct way possible.
Yep.
And,
did you say retard?
Breakfast Club parents. Did I?
Yeah, just now.
I think I did.
Okay, good. That makes me feel better. I'd prefer not to be the only one that says that for me.
I'm with you, Team Gibbet.
Yeah.
The weird stereotype to me, and this isn't so much a stereotype as a strange characterization, is this concept that everyone is trying so hard to get laid and no one gets laid.
Yep. Not a single bit.
Like every time you saw a boy and a girl face to face, the boy's grabbing her boobs and she's smacking him in the face, like, no, you don't. Everybody's trying so hard. In reality, nobody's really trying very hard. Not like that. Not like that that depiction. Yeah. But all kinds of people are actually getting laid, almost by accident.
Yeah, but Jason Robards and his and his old bag wife, they had all the getting on they could get.
Oh yeah, that's right. That was an uncomfortable scene, wasn't it?
Randy forgot about that because
Piper Laurie having a.
Yeah, we all tried to forget, but it happened.
I Piper Laurie 20 years ago, I would have hit it. Whoa. Totally.
All right, black guy dies first. No, but that stoner kid looked like he might. I kind of was waiting for it. Decapitation, no, not that kind of movie. Somebody peeing, probably, but off screen somewhere. Wilhelm scream, tried to find it, couldn't.
Didn't.
Bad guy with a theme song or theme sound or song. Dreams had a theme song, kind of weird, like when they were in the toilet paper land. The Kenobi type, I'm going to give to Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah, I can see that. Jason Robards kind of taking that role also.
Sort of, but every once in a while, we all have... Quote, so-and-so 1845. He's like a freak about that stuff.
Yeah, and then when Feldman started doing it back, you're going to lose that girl. Beatles, 1965.
Yeah, that was great.
Oh, come on.
It's like, whatever.
Like you ever listened to a Beatles album, Corey Feldman?
Ever.
And looked at the date.
Yeah.
Right.
Ever. Animal or robot is comedy relief. Corey Haim, basically.
Yeah, he's the robotic.
He was a cyborg.
I liked him, though.
That's what I was doing with the leg.
Kid named Billy, Bobby, Peter, or Buddy.
The lead.
We had a Bobby. Yeah, Bobby is Feldman.
That's true. But we should add Dinger to that to see how many more. See if we can see that in any other movies.
I wonder how many.
You know, Dinger is the mascot to the baseball, the Colorado Rockies here.
Oh, really?
I did not know that.
Dude, yeah.
A little bit of trivia for you.
They didn't name it after this movie, I hope.
No.
Okay. Please, I hope not.
No, he's a Triceratops, if that makes any sense.
Oh, not at all.
Of course.
So how about cave that looks like a vagina? Nope.
No caves.
No caves.
Oh, unfortunately.
No. I looked for it. I always do. all right, let's sum up this movie in a Twitter post. I love this part of the show. This is where I get to hear you three guys say things in 140 characters or less. Let's start this time with, who was last, now first. Brian Dunaway.
Hi. Dream a little dream. It's not Lost Boys, but it is the only other two Corey's movie I'll admit to watching.
Nice.
Miss Haim, 140 characters, six periods.
Nice work. Let's go with Randy Jordan.
Piper Laurie and Meredith Salinger have something in common. I'd hit it.
She's really held. The Meredith chick really held up too. She looks great.
Yeah, she's very pretty
today.
Oh my gosh, I'd hit it so hard. She's next person to pull me out. Would
dude,
be
old,
King
dirty
everyone,
old
seriously.
Man Jordan on this episode. Jeez, look at him. But
Meredith Salinger. I mean, she is just in this
she
film.
She dropped it.
Like she was 19 or 20 when she made this movie. Yeah. Holy, yeah.
She had a Justine Bateman thing going on then too, and she does even more now.
Oh, yeah, she looks a lot like Justine Bateman. That's true. That's weird. It's not her, is it?
No, it's
okay.
Not.
But that's, she looks uncannily like her. That's funny. I was trying to think of what she reminded me of. Anyway, who did we not do? Oh, Ibbot.
Yeah. A movie about teen angst edited by kids with ADHD and a Starbucks triple espresso.
Nice. Very nice. My favorite part of that was, oh, Ibbot. And you go, yes. And then you went on to the thing. That was great.
That's my name.
Hey, that's me. All right. Well, I'm going to tell people what they missed when they went to the fridge and got a big old fat hot dog to chew on while they were out of the room. This is what they missed. I'm sorry, but that is not Jason Robards' voice. That's all I'm saying. I don't even remember what that was from. Oh, him singing. Yeah. I didn't realize it was Frog Boy. So
couldn't even find a someone who sounded like Jason Robards to sing that.
Yeah.
What's he look like? I don't know.
Something else we learned: old people really like to eat breakfast in tiny little spaces. That
and
weird
one
restaurant.
Day you will too.
Yeah, one day I will too. Robards and his wife sleep in a equally tiny bed. Ooh, old people doing it. In my dreams, everything is covered in toilet paper. Feldman spent half the movie with a lip that looked like a herpes bomb. Do you notice that? When she kissed him on that, I was like, dude, do not kiss that.
No.
I love that in the last scene, he's so tired of his lip looking all busted. He pulls a Band-Aid off his forehead so that can look busted too.
Yeah.
Look at this now.
Yes, right, exactly. Yeah. Taking his jacket off to throw down. I'll take the Band-Aid off too.
Yep. I also have down here, poor Ron, sweet stash though. He was the stepdad boyfriend thing that her mother was going out with that stabbed somebody or something. Didn't that happen?
Yeah.
Or am I making that up? He didn't stab anyone. What am I thinking of? He did something bad to someone. Oh, yeah, they injected her with that freaking death serum. What the hell was that?
Drug their daughter.
Oh my gosh, I forgot. It almost killed her. She's like bleeding and stuff. Oh
No. She was bleeding because Feldman had to break the window to get in and try and wake her up.
Yeah,
that was his blood.
It was his blood. That is so funny.
Okay, I thought she was bleeding for some reason.
You went to the fridge to get a hot dog.
So this teenager who's courting your daughter follows her home. He's screaming at you. He wants to go into her bedroom. You say go home to him. You put her in bed. And then you hear him crash through her window and jump on her. And what do? Escort him out, kind of knock him down onto the front
door. Come on, let's go.
Like, are you kidding? I think you'd pick up the nearest solid object and just swing it for hours.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Well, they were also the kind of parents who drug their daughter, too.
Yeah, that's true. Still, even if the drugging didn't make her bleed, that is, I mean, who does that in movies now to their kids? Nobody. Not a single thing I've ever seen did that. And at the time, I'm sure people went, look at that. They put her to sleep so you can't hang out with Corey Feldman. That's funny.
That's totally what I'd do.
It's like I'm trying to think when I would ever inject anything into my kids.
I can't wait until I get grown up and have kids.
That's terrible. So there you go. That's what you missed. Next time, maybe you'll pay more attention, including me with the blood. That's going to do it for this episode of Film Sack. Holy crap. I don't have a quote from Scott Fletcher because Scott Fletcher did not provide one for this movie because I think he hated it that much. No, I don't know. I don't know the reason.
Can I point out too on that note that there are 23 memorable quotes according to IMDb. 23 memorable quotes from this movie. I think The Godfather has 24.
Wow.
That's how good this movie was.
That is so wrong. But there you have it nonetheless. Hey, if people want to know what we're doing next week, let's tell you. We're watching the movie The Omega Man. We promised it. We guaranteed it. Now it's happening. The Omega Man. Yep, Chuck Heston. Good times. Last one ever, right? That's it.
And I'm going to be the last one of the four of us to survive it.
I think you are. I have a lot of bad things to say about that movie, but I cannot wait to talk about Omega Man.
So, I loved that movie.
So go to Netflix, watch Omega Man. It's up there free for streaming. If you can't get it there, you don't have Netflix, go rent it. I wouldn't recommend torrenting it, but do whatever you got to do. And get that movie and watch it. And we will talk about that next week. Can't wait for that. To follow us on Twitter, follow us at twitter.com/ FilmSack. If you want to visit us on the web, go to filmsack.com. You'll find show notes to this very movie right there and links to all the shows we've done. You can also email us at filmsack@gmail.com. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
Now I've got to go poon smother girl.
Yeah, I know it.
Randy, you stole your gig. That's me. How did you know? How did you guess?
Do you ever find yourself picking your butthole and somebody comes in?
No. Never once. Not ever.
Me either. And that's a shame.
Hey, but.
Hello, is this the film sack?
This is the film sack. Oh, man.
All right.
Everyone is jacked up.
Okay, yeah, we didn't have a quote from Scott Fletcher for the end of the show, so I'm going to do one.
Do it.
All right, here we go. The Scott Fletcher style dream a little dream quote. Okay, now I got to think of a quote. Okay, I've got it. Usually when you pack, moving tends to follow.
That's pretty close. Masturbation joke.
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.